This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. Now, we often hear about how a certain level of stress is to be expected at work. But how much stress becomes too much? And how do we recognize warning signs that our mental health is tipping over the edge? And should our only options be to live with it, to quit the job, or worse, resort to drastic measures? Joining me on the show today, clinical psychologist Evelyn Song. We're going to explore the realities of high-stress workplaces and whether it's something we really need to learn how to cope, something like stress management skills, how would that help us, and how can organizations support their employees? Now, Evelyn, thank you so much for joining me. To start with, from your clinical observations, are you concerned that people are actually experiencing increasing levels of stress and pressure at the workplace?
Right. So interestingly, many of my clients, they come in right now for therapy. The reason for coming in has kind of like shifted a little bit from as compared to, during the pandemic or even pre-COVID. So yes, I think that it's quite concerning. It's because, I notice a lot of clients, they express feeling more stressed out actually. Due to a couple of reasons. The first one that I hear quite commonly is because of the transition. Because right now, they have to transit back to working in the office, cranking up, work stuff. And then it's kind of like, employers are also expecting them to actually recoup some of the losses over the past 2 years as well. So that's the first one. The second one that I'm seeing is also there's a lot of uncertainties too, especially when it comes to, inflation and some financial instability in some of them. And the third one that I'm seeing quite a lot is a lot of them express feeling this, this dreadful feeling and emotional fatigue, whereby, especially among the healthcare workers, right? So they've actually shared, they feel so burnt out already. Even though businesses are opening up, there are more opportunities, you can meet your friends and go out. But the truth is people are actually feeling more tired and burnout.
And, what do you think this is due to? Is it, and I feel like there could be two parts of it. It could be that there are more stresses, like you said, employers perhaps have certain expectations in order to meet the bottom line and things like that. But is it also that our ability or our threshold has decrease, right? Our ability to manage certain levels of stress simply because of what we've been through in the last 2 years.
Yeah. So if we look back, right, like 2.5 years ago, like pre-COVID, maybe, if we imagine that, let's say stress is like stress and our body's like we're driving a car, right? So maybe previously this car is like driving, say, 80 km/h. But during the pandemic, like everyone is just trying to adapt, trying to do things. Then we started driving like 120 km/h. And then right now there's another round of transition. But the truth is that car is already like so overworked. And the car means like our body, right? So it's already so overworked. So I would think that it could possibly be due to, workload would be one, but it's also an accumulated kind of thing. So it's not like, oh, maybe it's because right now the main reason is because of workload. But I guess there's also many other factors to consider apart from workload, like you have to readjust to your family needs, because 2 years, many things would have changed, even though it feels like just happened less than a year ago. So I guess this accumulation can lead to burnout, and this burnout can be presented in many different ways. Especially burnout can also look very different depending on the field of work that you're in. For example, if you're working in a company versus if you're a healthcare provider, burnout can look very different comparing these two groups of people.
Could you give some examples, do you think?
Yeah. So let's say I actually have two clients. I'm gonna not mention their names, but mention their profession. So one is a non-medical person. Another person is a medical officer, right? So the non-medical person, she came to me because she shared that she has been feeling quite restless at work. At times, you know, she would even wake up from her sleep. She would experience palpitations, sweating, cannot sleep, and don't feel rested at all. She works in a company as a project manager, so a lot of coordination work kind of thing, and she's not from KL as well. So whenever she hears that notification from her phone, that ding kind of sound, she would immediately feel that, you know, panic attack already, because it's like, oh no, something must have gone wrong. And she has to, in a way, work off hours, quote unquote off hours, even though it's not stated, you know, in her contract or stuff like that, but she is told to, you know, be on standby and stuff like that. So this has actually caused a lot of emotional fatigue and also had a toll in terms of her physical health as well. So she came to me with mood swings, irritable, crying, and feeling really trapped because she's also doing hybrid right now. So working in the office and at home, and home means, because she's renting a room, so home means that small little space that she has. So that's for the non-medical person that I was talking about. So with the medical officer, it's another different form of stress. So this person from KL has been involved in managing all the COVID patients that time during the pandemic. And because of the lack of staff that time, right? So they have to work like overtime. They have to work multiple shifts on call and stuff like that. And witnessing, you know, patients dying and that kind of helplessness, it actually, you know, he was actually quite surprised that, you know, I thought I would feel stressed back then, he was saying, but I didn't realize that I'm feeling even more stressed right now. So there are some studies that shows among healthcare providers, first responders or nurses, right, many of them actually do experience post-traumatic stress-like symptoms, post-ish kind of pandemic. The symptoms are very similar to those war veterans when they come back from war and stuff like that. So, yeah, so it's a different kind of burnout. It's a different kind of fatigue that I'm seeing right now.
So, you know, we've jumped right into using the words burnout. Is stress equivalent to burnout?
Great question. So many people think that stress is like an enemy, right? I shouldn't feel stress. But actually, stress is not our enemy. In fact, stress can actually help us to be more motivated to perform our daily tasks and routine. The thing about stress is if, let's say, we will perform the best, if let's say we have 50% of stress, but if, let's say, our stress level exceeds 50%, for example, then that's where we may experience fatigue and burnout. So what's the difference between stress and burnout? Mainly is when we feel stressed, right, we can, when we've accomplished certain tasks, then we will feel better. So, for example, let's say, remember the time where back then we have exams? So we feel so stressed going for exams, but once exam is done, then we're like, I feel so relieved already. But burnout can happen beyond that task that we're talking about. So we may feel, you know, like we don't have motivation to do things. We may feel tired. We may feel like we're dreading. We may feel that, you know, there's this low mood and anxiety happening to the point where we may not even be able to focus and complete the task that we want to do. So stress is good, but to the point where if it goes beyond that threshold, when it kind of affects your ability to function, to focus, it affects your social life, then it becomes an issue.
We do experience these from time to time, I feel. Sometimes it's transient, right? Because it's so hard to quantify. When do we draw the line that, it's something that we can cope with at that moment? When does it become then too much to the level of burnout?
Right. So, this is the interesting thing. Many of my clients, they come in, right, even though they may display some signs of anxiety and depression, but they often make remarks like, if they feel low motivation, they don't want to do things, they would say that, oh, I'm just lazy. Or when they have a lot of thoughts, right, and I'm just too weak, I think too much, right? So where do you actually draw the line? So basically, I split this into three different aspects that we can look into to see when it becomes beyond so-called normal and maybe we are burnout already. The first thing that it's easier to pick up, which is the physical symptoms. So many of us will feel that, I feel very tired, body ache, my heart starts beating fast, I'm sweating. For me, I notice when I'm stressed, I would tend to clench my teeth, my jaw, right? So different people, they would have different kind of physical symptoms. So if you start noticing your body, feeling your here pain, there pain, aching here and there, so maybe this is something for you to take note on. But it may not necessarily mean that you are burnout. Then we can look into the second aspect. So the second part would be whether it's affecting your functioning. Now, functioning here, we can look into three different areas. So your work, social, and personal care. Work, meaning to say whether or not you are making more mistakes, you tend to be more forgetful or slower at your work, right? Social bit would be, sometimes I'm just so stressed where I just want to be alone. I don't want to see anyone. Or you will have mood swings and start to have some kind of conflict with people around you. The third part would be personal, which means, perhaps you're not eating well, not sleeping well, maybe drinking more alcohol, smoking more. This kind of personal self-care has been compromised. So that's the second part, right? The functioning. And this would be something that is not as easy to pick up as compared to the physical symptoms, but this would need for you to be more attentive to your day-to-day functioning. The third bit is a little bit harder, but a lot of times when clients come in, they would express all these things, which is the emotional state that they are in. So for example, if you're feeling so stressed, it's affecting your physical, it's affecting you physically, it's affecting your work, social, and then it's also affecting your mood. For example, you feel more irritable, you feel like crying, you feel trapped. You feel like everything you do is just hopeless. And even if you go take a break, but then it doesn't feel like it's helping you or making you feel more recharged. So these are some of the broad kind of aspects that you can look into to determine whether or not it's beyond the normal level.
All right. Let's go for a quick break and come back and look at what we can do then, right? Because I think if I threw a stone right now, I would definitely hit somebody who fits, all of these criteria for stress overload and potential burnout. So it's very important for us to recognize that and to know how to manage it so that we don't let it get too much. I'm speaking today to clinical psychologist Evelyn Song, discussing whether stress is an occupational hazard. Evelyn has already explained some level of stress is normal, but not to the extent where it's causing a whole load of physical, functional, and emotional problems. So let's come back and continue this discussion right here on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. I'm speaking today to Evelyn Song, clinical psychologist. We're discussing stress, especially where it relates to work, because now that we are trying to transition out of the pandemic, a lot of pressure is being put on employers and employees as we are trying to regain some losses that were made during the pandemic. Some of us are facing financial instability. mobility, you know, even companies are going through that as well. We know there are certain professions that have really been, you know, put to the grind during the pandemic. For instance, the healthcare profession, stress and burnout is a very real problem in certain professions, if not all, really. So learning to recognize stress, and when we are not able to cope with stress and when it leads to burnout, Evelyn has talked a lot about that. And I just like to unpack that a little bit more, but in a real life context. If we look at scenarios that could occur in the workplace, especially where it relates to the functioning and the emotional issues that you brought up, how they could play out when it comes to workplace scenarios. Do you have any examples to share, Evelyn?
So one example would be, I'm just going to share one of the clients that I'm seeing recently, right? So this person is actually an entrepreneur, and this person has also been, you know, sharing on and off, you know, this unable to fall asleep. So this person came in with sleep problems. And even though we talked about sleep for a bit, and we talked about, you know, self-care, we talked about certain techniques, but then eventually as we try to unfold, then we realize that there's a lot of conflict among the team members. So for example, when they were working from home, because they have to manage like certain projects, so when they were working from home, there were a lot of miscommunication or misunderstandings among team members. And this person, as the entrepreneur, right, so had to step in to manage, you know, the employees, the staff. But then when he did that, it kind of got backfired. You know, sometimes the employees would share that, oh, you don't understand about my problems, you don't understand about my stress. So it becomes personal already. So there's a lot of different kind of stresses. So the thought about, oh, am I not good enough as a boss, and am I not treating them all fairly? So that kind of took a toll in his work as well. So he wasn't able to focus. He was also very anxious about making some mistakes. But at the same time, you know, his intention was to just make sure that everyone is fairly treated and make sure that everyone is happy working under him. And eventually, I think it has come to a point where, you know, some team members just decided to leave the company and so on and so forth. So what I'm trying to say is sometimes work itself, whether it's internal conflict, this can also affect not just your work itself, but it can also affect your social life, for example, whether you and your colleagues or you and your family. And eventually that has taken a toll on his own physical and mental health too.
So what would someone do in an instance like this? I mean, that individual, for him, it had gotten to the point where he recognized it was interfering with his sleep, for instance, and it was something that, you know, cannot go on, right? So I guess, you know, at some point, if we're aware enough, we may be able to identify we've reached a tipping point. What do we do then? And it seems like there's so much to deal with. There's the employee side, there's the personal side, and if it affects a family, there may be the family side. It seems like there's just so much, right? So perhaps first, what do we do when we recognize we're at that point and we need to do something?
Right. So once you recognize that, you know, you're going through this kind of emotional or physical kind of turmoil, I think the first thing that we can do is actually, you know, go talk to someone, right? What this person did was he actually went to talk to some of his friends and business coach, and they actually shared that, you know, you look like you really need additional help or support other than talking to us. So I think what was helpful for him was talking to people around him who knows him, because these will be the people who would give feedback, right, saying that, oh, how they would know how you were back then and how are you doing right now. So first, try to speak to someone to to get some feedback or perhaps to even share your problems if you're comfortable with that. Now, the second step I would say is, you know, if people around you also express that, you know, I think you may need some additional help and stuff like that. So maybe this would be the time that you can seek out and talk to some mental health professional about this. But having said that, if you don't want to speak to, let's say, a therapist, a counselor about this, another thing that you can consider, which I think this is something that many people, they don't do enough, is that take time off, really, for some form of self-care. Because a lot of times when we talk about self-care, right, the immediate reaction that I hear from most of us is that, I don't want to do self-care because it's like selfish, it's like wasting time and stuff like that. But we really need to do self-care for many reasons. The first one is because if, let's say, you're so stressed out, our body will actually produce stress hormones. And how do we channel all these stress hormones out? A lot of times it's through our anxiety symptoms. It's where we feel really restless. It's where we feel really agitated. So instead of going that way, perhaps you can try to explore exercising, really. And exercising doesn't have to be long. 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes of walk, that's already okay, right? So it doesn't have to be like hardcore workout. So just go for 20 minutes of walk just to channel that kind of stress hormones out. So that will already help you and your body biologically. But of course, the social bit is what we shared earlier about reaching out, talk to a peer, talk to someone about it.
So 2 points there. When it comes to self-care, though, if you don't, address the underlying problems that are still there, you know, if you take the time off, whether it's exercise, whether it's taking a break, but then after that, you're still coming back to the same problems, would it really help?
Yeah. So the thing is, when we are too stressed out, part of our brain will actually shut down. So the part where it's what we call as the frontal lobe. So when we're too stressed out, biologically, research has shown that our frontal lobe that involves in planning, organizing, decision-making will actually get compromised. So the thing is not about taking time off would solve everything, but taking this time off and exercising can help elevate, you know, reduce some of the stresses, and then perhaps it can help you think better in making decisions.
Okay. And the other thing I want to pick up on is, you know, talking to someone, whether it's people around you who know you best, or whether it's somebody like a mental health professional. What have you found when it comes to people's willingness to do that? I mean, how much stigma is there when it comes to admitting that we're stressed, we just can't cope?
Yeah. So actually, there's quite a bit of stigma, I would say. Personally, in my clinical experience, right, there are some who would come in to seek for services themselves, but there are also quite a number of them where, you know, they are being in a way dragged in to see us unwillingly. Reason being is because, you know, maybe they have this fear, right? Like, if I'm coming to see you, it means that I can't handle my stuff, right? I can't manage my stress, which also means that I'm not good enough as compared to the rest. So there's a lot of fear. This fear, I would say, maybe it's the fear of being labeled to have anxiety, depression. But I guess the fear also stems from the fear of being seen as incompetent, being seen as quote-unquote useless. So there's a lot of labeling that is happening around. But I guess there's also this element of, if I come and see you for therapy, I don't know what to expect. I'm not sure if you are going to, you know, like, I don't know, like hypnotize me and say something to me and stuff like that. So there's a lot of other kinds of fear too, because of this uncertainty about reaching out for services. So yeah, this is the general thing that I see in clients. So that's why most of us, at least for me, when clients, they come in, I would ask them, right, like, what brings you here and what do you understand about therapy? So I'll kind of set that first to let them know that therapy is not about, you know, like hypnosis only. Therapy is not about just for the mentally ill people, but a lot of my clients, they actually come in as part of just to manage their stress and then to see how they can improve themselves. It's part of self-development and growth, I would say.
And about labeling, and you can see where, especially in certain professions such as among healthcare workers, it is said that, you know, you must know how to deal with stress because that's part of the job. And if you can't, then you're not worthy of working in this. What are your thoughts on that in terms of making certain professions just more healthy, you know, in that sense that people aren't discriminated against just because they admit that their work is causing them stress?
Right. So as a healthcare provider myself, right, I've actually heard people dropping remarks, just like what you mentioned, Shaoyi, you know, you're a clinical psychologist, you have to be able to cope with this. If not, then how are you going to help other people? Right. So, well, there is some, well, I would kind of differentiate that by saying that we have the knowledge, we have the skills, but at the end of the day, many of us in the healthcare, as healthcare providers, you know, we are still human, we have emotions. Just like the doctor that I was sharing earlier, right? He is a doctor. Perhaps you have seen people passing away, people dying, but it doesn't mean it makes witnessing that easier. Because at the end of the day, we are all still human. We are still emotions. And if, let's say, we shut down the emotion bit of us, then how can we provide services for clients, for patients with care, right? I've also seen, especially during the pandemic and right now post-pandemic, where a lot of my peers who are clinicians themselves, they are going through this phase of compassion fatigue. So compassion fatigue is like another form of burnout for healthcare providers, where they care so much to the point that it's also affecting their own mental health and physical health as well. So at the end of the day, you know, we all connect through care. We all connect through, you know, love and care. So I guess the thing here is to really to understand that knowledge is one thing, but the emotional bit is also another thing. So they are not equal in that sense.
And a lot of our capacity to address the issues that are causing that stress would come from the organization, then the workplace that we're in, the environment and the system, right? So how do you think organizations can also look at supporting employees in terms of the stress that they are facing, or if employees are already at the point of burnout? Are there any recommendations that you would suggest?
Right. So I see organizations is like a big family, right? So imagine this big family, there's also like subfamilies in it. It's just like different departments, the subfamily and different people, maybe the subfamilies even. So to support employees, I would say it depends on what would be your need as the organization. So for example, during the pandemic and even post-pandemic right now, some companies, they actually approach us as healthcare providers, right, to do, let's say, stress management kind of training in the organization level. So everyone would attend, right, like 200, 300 people would attend. But there are also some companies where they want to focus a little bit more on, say, the department. So like the subfamily, they want to focus on that department, let's say the sales department, because they are feeling very defeated. They are feeling really stressed out. So how do you then help them manage their stress? But there are also some companies where, you know, instead of focusing on a department, maybe they focus on the different head of departments across the company to see how these head of departments can help them pick up the signs and symptoms of their staff who are in distress. So at the end of the day, I think there are many ways to do it. If we talk about stress management, it can also be tailored to whether it's to the whole family, the whole organization, the sub-family, or even the sub-sub-family. But I think personally, I don't think stress management sessions would be, you know, like a one-time off kind of thing, because stress is something that is ongoing, right? It's just like servicing your aircon. You wouldn't just service, like, say, once a year, especially if you're using it every day. So same goes to stress, I believe. So I think stress management kind of session is not a one-time off kind of thing, but perhaps we can start by reviewing quarterly and to see what would be some of the needs of the employees, whether by department, by head of department, or as the organization as a whole.
What does a stress management session look like? What do you do?
So it depends on whether I'm doing in a large scale, like everyone will attend, irregardless of their position, or if I'm doing specifically to a particular department or head of department, right? So stress management, it can happen in many different ways. So we can talk about what is stress, what's burnout, how to differentiate the signs and symptoms, and the actual skills that what will be some of the skills that we can do to apply to ourselves or with the team members. So the stress management session that I normally do is, I name it becoming your own therapist, because I think everyone has the capacity to be their own therapist. And how do we do that? Firstly, you need to be more aware. So in my session, we cover a lot about, you know, how do you be more aware of the signs and symptoms. Once you are aware, what you can do about it. Sometimes this stress management session can also involve understanding your personality and how your personality can create conflict between team members as well. And also learning, you know, the things, what to say and what not to say when someone is in distress. So again, stress management itself is very broad. So it depends on what the organization is looking at.
But of course, this is conditional on the organization being sort of enlightened and aware that they can support employees in this way. But what if some employers don't think that way, right? And for employees to bring it up, whether it's with their direct superior or their HR department, can be difficult. How do you think employees can open up these kind of dialogue, you know, in an effective way?
So what I've been thinking, and based on my experience, useful for some employees is sometimes, yes, there's maybe a lot of, you know, red tapes or things like this. It's quite difficult to happen. So my take would be, would it be possible then to, among the employees, to build your own kind of social support with each other? Because again, at the end of the day, this person can go for therapy individually, but if we look at the bigger picture, it's like the whole systemic kind of issue as well, right? So would it then be possible for, you know, some employees to create some form of support group among themselves? And this would be a really good avenue for them not to just let off steam, right? But also to feel supported in the process as well. So sometimes maybe waiting for companies to do things, maybe that would take some time, but you can still start with among yourself and your colleagues as well.
Are you concerned, Evelyn, if we look at the bigger picture of what's happening with almost everyone, and we talk about this mental health pandemic that's, you know, occurring at the same time, what are your concerns about these kinds of issues if they continue to go unaddressed?
So let's say from the company's perspective, because there has been research that says companies that look into their employee well-being can actually increase loyalty by 32%, right? So there's this report that says that. I would say if, let's say, from an organization kind of perspective, long-term-wise, maybe know, employees will feel demotivated, their work performance will be reduced. But in a personal kind of level, for the employees, perhaps many health and mental health related issues can arise if a person is going through prolonged kind of stress and burnout. Because we were talking earlier how stress is not a bad thing, but prolonged stress and burnout can actually take a toll in our body. So people may develop some health problems, let's say cardiovascular kind of problems, or even diabetes, hypertension. Some would experience anxiety and depression. And, you know, a lot of clients who goes to see like medical officer, perhaps they think that they have some cardiac problem because of palpitation, but once they go and see them, maybe everything is actually fine. So this will leave them feeling even more confused, right? And perhaps the thing about anxiety or depression is not being looked into. So I think it can lead to a toll in a systemic kind of level in terms of organization, but also personal level when it comes to a person's health and mental health.
So, of course, stress never goes away. We will experience lots of factors that can put pressure on us, whether it's at work, you know, at home with the family. There will always be challenging phases that we go through in life. I want to ask you about resilience. How do we build resilience to deal with these stressors, you know, as we go through life?
Right. So I love this question. A lot of people ask how to cope with stress since stress is not going away. Yes, it's not going away. But again, it's not all bad, right, as we talked about earlier. So if stress is going to be there for a long time, maybe this will be, you know, we can see it as an opportunity for us to build resources for ourselves, to build resilience for ourselves. When we talk about building resources, resilience, it can happen in many forms, right? It can mean, you know, you want to attend some courses, exercise, go for therapy, try something new. But then I would like to also emphasize a lot of times when we talk about self-care, again, maybe it's time for us to kind of like switch that idea about self-care being selfish. Self-care means, you know, wasting time. If you kind of switch that a little bit, in order to do things that you want, in order to, you know, to be sustainable, we need to have self-care. And how do we do that? Self-care is like building resources for ourselves. It's like picking up spare parts for your car, you know. So I think this would be very, very important. So again, whether it's to do it biologically, go for exercise, juggling with your diet, psychologically or socially, you know, expanding your network, going for therapy, I think these are can actually be really fun ways to kind of learn a little bit more about yourself as well. Because I think as we grow older, we get more serious. And when it comes to self-care, it's like, oh, I need to do this, that, this, that. But it takes away that fun kind of element. So I hope that as, you know, we are all going through this motion, we are all trying to be resilient. I hope that this will also be an opportunity for every one of us to build these kind of resources for ourselves too.
And I want to end on hopefully something optimistic. When you help individuals with burnout, share some, you know, good outcomes. What's the outlook for them when they learn how to manage that stress, clear their minds, have better skills and strategies in order to address the issues that's causing the burnout?
Mm. So a lot of times when people, they are able to, you know, when they are so stressed, they will feel really trapped, right? So when they see past that, then they would make remarks like, oh, I never thought that I could feel this way, like lighter or happier or more relaxed. Whether it's seeing us in therapy or actually most of the time, if let's say you see someone in distress and you reach out to talk to them, a lot of times they will actually say that, oh, I never knew that someone actually listened or care about how I feel. So sometimes it really takes that kind of, you know, checking in with them, and that itself can make someone feels so much better and they are not lonely in that sense. Because again, going back to the stigma, once we reach out, it's kind of like, okay, I'm comfortable with talking to you with whatever that you're going through. So that can kind of like break that stigma a little bit. And sometimes this can in itself bring a lot of comfort to those who are struggling. So yeah, if you see someone struggling, reach out to them. That can actually make someone else's day. And if you're struggling, do reach out, because there are so many of us who cares too.
And I think that's a hopeful note to end on. Thank you so much, Evelyn. I've been speaking to Evelyn Tsung, clinical psychologist, about recognizing and managing burnout, especially workplace-related burnout. But there's still more to talk about when it comes to mental health. So at our upcoming Health and Living Life event happening on the 18th of June, we'll be devoting a full panel session to mental health. And join us, and you can ask our group of experts directly. Maybe you want advice from a psychologist. Maybe you want to know more about community support from an NGO, or you want guidance on how to approach workplace stress, as we've discussed, especially from a HR perspective. This half-day event is taking place. Again, it's Saturday, 18th of June at Nexus Bangsa South. It's our first in-person event after the pandemic, and we're looking forward to bringing our listeners and our regular experts together. So register now at bfm.my/health-event, or you can go to our Facebook page at BFM Radio to find the link to the event page. Look forward to seeing you there. Meanwhile, this has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.